Welcome to the 66 to 87 podcast here on DK Pittsburgh Sports Radio. I'm your moderator, Tom Reed, and I'm joined as always by Taylor Haas and Dave Molinari, our terrific tandem of Penguins hockey writers. We got a lot coming up for you on this show, including a visit from TSN analyst Craig Button, who will be talking to us in the third segment. But first, let's get through last night's game, a 2-1 shootout defeat at the hands of the reeling Philadelphia Flyers. But not all was bad news. Taylor, you were at the arena. You covered the game. What is your headline coming out of last night's game?
I'm leading with Jeff Carter. I mean, he didn't get a point in that game, but he looked really good. I mean, this was not a Patrick Marleau situation where, you know, he's old, he's slow, he's slowing down. And they didn't ease him in either. I mean, second line, he was on the power play, he was on the penalty kill. They put him out there in overtime. Yep. So he has the speed to be, I mean, despite him being, I think, what, 36, he has the speed to be out there in overtime. But he was good. He was taking a lot of shots. His line together was taking a lot of shots. I mean, McCann had 7, Zucker had 3, he had 2 himself. But, I mean, he was attempting a lot more, too, and a couple more chances to score that, you know, just didn't count as a shot on goal. But, yeah, I thought Jeff Carter was really good.
Sidney Crosby with the lone goal. And I believe in the building, Taylor, it was announced as John Taglianetti with an assist. Who's John Taglianetti for people that don't know?
Yeah, he's the associate head equipment manager. I think he got promoted. He was the assistant for a couple of years. He's associate head equipment manager now. But, it started out, the Penguins in their own zone. Dumoulin broke a stick. Crosby gave his to Dumoulin. Dumoulin used that stick to start a breakup up the other way. Well, now Crosby doesn't have a stick. And by the time, I mean, it's happening fast. By the time he gets by the Penguins bench, Taglianetti is standing on the bench, leaning over the players with Crosby's own stick. And then Letang, you know, carries the puck to the net. Carter Hart misplays it. Crosby puts it in. And, yeah, like you said, in the building, Ryan Mill, the PA announcer, announced it as, you know, Crosby assisted by Letang, Dumoulin, and Taglianetti, which is I thought that was funny. But, yeah, no, that's a nice gesture. And Sullivan and the players spoke highly of, you know, what those guys do, the equipment guys do after the game.
Got to always be paying attention on that bench, don't you? You never know what's going to happen. Dave, a point dropped, obviously, in the skills competition. People know my opinion on skills competitions. But it wasn't all bad news last night, was it?
Oh, no. They picked, you know, despite losing, the Penguins actually gained a point in the standings because the two teams they're chasing, the Capitals and the Islanders, both lost in regulation. You know, perhaps the Islanders' loss was, you know, understandable. You know, they went into Boston and the Bruins apparently played a pretty good game, but I don't think anyone anticipated the Sabres going into Washington and absolutely having their way with the Capitals, beating them 5-2. So, you know, the resurgent Sabres certainly did the Penguins a favor tonight.
And we'll get a little bit more into that in our next segment. But I do want to speak just in general. It's kind of that time of year where you're not sure what you're getting with some of these teams. And Philadelphia is a great example. I mean, they have been hemorrhaging goals, not getting goaltending. And tonight they look like a functioning team that still thinks it has some chance to maybe wiggle in there if they can get on a hot streak. Taylor, what did you think of the Flyers' performance tonight?
Well, and I think a big part of it was Carter Hart, who has been, you know, he struggled throughout the year, to say the least. And then he was on his game tonight. He, of course, wasn't tested very much in the first period. The Penguins didn't get their first shot on goal until it was like 5:20 left in the first. And then they only ended up recording 3 shots in the first period. So he wasn't tested early on. He was tested later on. And Carter Hart was solid. And that's kind of what you were saying. You never know what version of the Flyers you're going to get. I guess you don't know what version of Carter Hart you're going to get either. But the Flyers got Carter Hart at his best tonight.
And Dave, I would think it's a teaching moment. Again, we're going to talk about this in the second segment, or just a reminder from the coaching staff that, yes, the team's playing pretty well right now, but you can't overlook anybody, especially as teams are jockeying for position, maybe trying to get home ice here down the stretch.
Yeah, I don't know that they necessarily were looking past the Flyers. I mean, there's a piece of conventional wisdom in hockey that in the first game back at home after a long road trip, teams tend to struggle. And it certainly looked that way for the Penguins tonight. Once they did get going, I thought, you know, Carter Hart took a point away from them. They certainly generated enough good chances, but you know, for one of the few times this season, Carter Hart looked like Carter Hart is supposed to. You know, the goalie who's going to allow the Flyers to assemble a Stanley Cup contender. And if he would consistently play the way he did against the Penguins last night, the Flyers would not be in the predicament that they are.
Right. Dave, I want to stick with you for just a second because I obviously Taylor, what her focus and understandably so is the arrival of Jeff Carter. What did you see out of number 77 tonight in his Penguins debut?
I was somewhat skeptical of what he might bring to this team. And obviously one game is a very small sample size, but I was more impressed with his overall game and certainly with his speed than I expected to be. I mean, he gets around pretty well for a 36-year-old. Whether he can hold up on, you know, under the kind of workload that he'll we can't say for sure that he'll take on, but that he had in the game Thursday night, you know, I guess remains to be seen. But at this point, I think he looked like a very nice addition for them.
Taylor, sticking on that theme for a second, as far as his skating, a couple years ago he had a serious, I believe, ankle injury, and there was concern there about, you know, anytime you're on the wrong side of 30 and you start to have issues with it's going to hurt your skating in the way the game is played. But he seemed to, just in what the limited times I've seen him this year, he's bounced back. He looks like he's had a pretty good bounce back season. What do you anticipate, you know, maybe just after seeing him once, do you think he'll be a decent fit here?
Yeah, and it helps that he can play both center and wing. So as the Penguins' injury situation hopefully improves, you don't know. I mean, he can shift a wing, he can shift a center. But I mean, he was good at the faceoff circle tonight. He's been below 50% in LA, but he also has been playing mostly wing there, so he hasn't taken a whole lot. But he was at 69% tonight. I know through the first two periods, he had won 7 of 10. So he was really strong in the faceoff circle, too, especially in all zones, too, because I wrote before the game, this season he's been, like, especially bad at, like, defensive zone faceoffs. He's only won, like, 25% of them or whatever, but he was good there, too. So, I mean, that was an encouraging sign for him. I mean, yeah, he's definitely good at center for now, and we'll see if he gets moved to wing.
Dave, he's not playing, obviously, on a top line right now. But one of the – at times this team, which has so much talent, sometimes is kind of guilty of overpassing the puck. Can seeing a guy like that, a respected veteran, a two-time Stanley Cup winner, come in here and shoot the puck a lot, which has always been his reputation, can it rub off? Can it be infectious maybe to a group, even maybe to some of the guys who have made their living with the high skill that they have?
I'm sure that Mike Sullivan hopes that is contagious. But I wouldn't necessarily count on it. I don't think you're going to see guys make fundamental changes in the way they play the game, for better or for worse, just because they'll be exposed to Jeff Carter's game on a regular basis.
Yeah, I got to be careful what I say here because living in Columbus, there, Jeff Carter is still not a popular figure here, but he is a hell of a player. He has been a hell of a player, and we'll see. And it's always part of the game that I like the terrific shot and never been afraid to use it. That's it for our first segment. But when we come back, we'll have our usual second segment roundtable. We'll bat around some issues. And again, don't forget, we're going to have a visit from Craig Button. Almost forgot his first name there. And when we come back on the 66 to 87 podcast on DK Pittsburgh Sports Radio. Welcome back to the 66 to 87 podcast. We move into our second segment, a little roundtable, hot stove type of stuff. And, you know, next up for the Penguins are the Buffalo Sabres. And in any other podcast we would mention, you would say, boy, the pressure is really on the Penguins. Got to win both of these games because they're gimmies. Well, in the last 10 games, the Sabres are 4-3-3. And they have played some good hockey under Don Granato, the interim coach. They're playing faster. Rasmus Dahlin is starting to look more, a little bit more like a number one overall pick. And this is no longer a these are going to be games where their teams where the Penguins are really going to have to play well. It was interesting to listen to David Quinn the other night talking about how he thinks that you know, the division may end up getting decided by who does the best against New Jersey and Buffalo, because both teams are playing a little bit better. Taylor, you're going to be there in Buffalo this weekend covering for us. Your thoughts on the improvements of the Sabres?
Yeah, I mean, ever since they snapped that streak, they just look like a different team. And we talked about last, show, like who's even on there anymore. I mean, they traded Hall, Lazar, Eichel's not coming back for the year. And it's just a lot of young guys who there's no pressure on them. And it seems like they're just they're not as miserable anymore. So things are lighter. And that's why they've been doing so well. It reminds me of the 0304 team, because the 0304 team, the Penguins team, who set that record, the losing streak record, they had a really good run to finish the season. And when I, cause I did just do the oral history on those guys. And when I asked right. them about, you know, their end to the season, that's what they said is, you know, there was just no pressure towards the end. And then that's when they started turning it around and kind of making things tough for the teams that were fighting for the playoffs. So that might be what we're seeing here with the Sabres.
Dave, you know, one of the strange things to counter, as far as those, the Penguins teams that Taylor wrote about, was this team was expected to be pretty well. And as she mentioned, Taylor Hall is gone, but there is some still decent players here. Sam Reinhart has actually had a pretty decent season. Victor Olsson. There's some other talent on this team. The Penguins can't go in there counting on 4 points, right?
Oh, that's absolutely the case, especially when you consider the Penguins are relying on a somewhat diluted lineup of their own because of all the injuries. And, you know, this, as you suggested, Buffalo was certainly expected to have a better season than it has, but the Sabres have been down for a while, and thus they've had some high draft choices. You know, they brought some good prospects and young players into their organization. And while the best of them, Jack Eichel, won't be playing this weekend, there is some talent there. I certainly like the lineup that the Penguins will take into these games better than the one that Buffalo will have. But that, you know, that 4-3-3 run that the Sabres were on going into their game at Washington Thursday night isn't a fluke. Of the six combined losses there, five of them were by one goal. This is a team that's become quite competitive, and any opponent that doesn't take that seriously is asking for trouble.
The one thing, though, and again, and this is obviously there's no one player has been the root cause of the Sabres not playing well or playing well below standards this year. Obviously, Jack Eichel's the one we all think about, and he's not going to be available. Another player who won't be available, and this is a blow and something that you would hope that the Penguins could capitalize on, Linus Ullmark. They're a pretty good goalie when he's healthy, but he's not been healthy enough for them this year. He got hurt the other night very early, a couple minutes into the game, like 5 minutes into the game against Boston. So we'll see who ends up being the goalkeepers over the weekend. You would have to think Dustin Tokarski at least gets one of those games. But it's, again, it's been a strange year, but they, no question, as both Taylor and Dave mentioned, they are playing a lot better. Dave, let's move on here. You wrote an interesting piece, a contribution to our Friday Insider, and I hope fans always read the Friday Insider. So much good information on the Pirates, Steelers, and the Penguins. And the lead item this week is that the Penguins will not be signing a college free agent this spring after getting at least one in eight of the past 10 years. I'm going to have you explain that in a second. But I just want to give fans who are saying, well, what, I don't really understand what this big deal is. You can draft guys. Well, here's some of the players in recent years that the Penguins fans should at least be familiar with. Drew O'Connor is one out of Dartmouth. Casey DeSmith, kind of signed more by Wheeling, but we'll get into that in a second. New Hampshire, Zach Aston-Reese, Northeastern, and Connor Sherry, who won a couple of cups, was signed out of UMass. Dave, what's going on here, and why weren't they able to come to terms with any?
Ron Hextall says that they certainly tried. You know, sometimes it just doesn't work out. I mean, there are some people who believe that this was a bit of a down year for undrafted free agents in college. So there might not have been quite as many quality prospects as in a normal year. But one thing that's worth keeping in mind is that the Penguins couldn't have gone wild in this free agent market, even if they had been so inclined, because they already have 49 players under contract, and league rules only allow you to have 50. So, you know, they couldn't have done a whole lot. But as you mentioned, you know, this is an important way for teams to replenish their supply of prospects when they don't have a lot of early round draft choices, which has been the case for the Penguins for over a decade now. You know, they've been in win now mode for a long time.
Right.
And that often has involved trading first and second round draft choices. So if you can get a decent prospect who doesn't cost you a draft choice, you know, that's certainly a plus and something worth pursuing.
I know the Rangers have tried with some success. And again, a lot of these guys don't always hit. I think Chicago has done the same thing, trying to sign guys when you don't have draft picks. Taylor, what do you see in these? What is the success rate, if you can call it that, on signing these guys from college? I would think it would be rather low, is that they actually work out, or enlighten us on that.
I mean, looking at the Penguins specifically, the Penguins have had some pretty good luck with those guys. Some of them haven't been hits. Jake Lucchini, they traded. Maniscalco kind of having a rough start to this season. But I mean, like Adam Johnson played for them for a bit. Carter Rowney came up. Connor Sherry, like you said. Jason Megna and Brian Gibbons were up in Pittsburgh for a bit. So the ones the Penguins have signed have done, you know, relatively well. Around the league, I can't say, but the Penguins have definitely had some good luck with that. They've been able to get some of the top guys. But like Dave said, going into this year, because people ask me, you know, like in live queues, like, you know, are they going to be in on any top, you know, college free agents? But I mean, going into the deadline, they were at 48 of 50 contracts. That really didn't give them a whole lot of flexibility. You don't want to be at, you know, 49 heading into the to the deadline, and they added Wynton Carter. So the time when a lot of those guys became available when their college seasons ended and were signing, the Penguins just weren't able to be in on them. So they wouldn't have been able to get on any of the top guys, so they would have been going after kind of the leftovers.
Yeah, and one thing that Hextall mentioned is that philosophically he likes the idea of going after college free agents, and you know, that's been part of his management approach, whether in Philadelphia or in Los Angeles when he was assistant GM, but that he doesn't believe in the idea of carpet bombing is how he expressed it, and that you pursue just, you know, 20 college kids. He said he's much more comfortable picking one or two or three, you know, really promising prospects and, you know, doing what you can to sign one of those rather basically going for quality over quantity.
And they can go after kind of the ones that aren't as much of a sure thing and sign them to minor league deals, which they have done in the past too. And that's what they did this year. Like, they did sign goalie Tommy Napier out of Ohio State to a 3-year AHL deal, which is really weird because most AHL deals are only ever 1 year. I can't remember the last time I've seen Wilkes-Barre sign anyone to a multi-year deal, let alone 3 years. I talked to Kyoto about Napier, and he said, you know, he makes a really good first save. He covers a lot of the net. He's big. He's 6'3", I think 220. He said he reads the play really well. So, you know, they did sign the goalie to an AHL minor league contract that they like. And they locked him up for 3 years. But again, like, that doesn't count towards the 50 contract limit. So it's a really low risk signing.
Yeah. And right. I think the only downside to that is if another NHL team decides they like him and would want to sign him, they would be able to swoop in and put him on an NHL contract. And, you know, him being under contract to Wilkes-Barre wouldn't mean anything as far as the Penguins were concerned.
Yeah, that's really rare. That's really rare because the Penguins have had like guys lining up on AHL deals before who, you know, were deserving of NHL deals. And that's kind of like, you're allowed to do that, but I think I think it's kind of like a bad look. You can kind of hurt your relationship with another GM. I just think of like Ryan Haggerty a few years ago when he was like their leading scorer on an AHL contract, and no one touched, he might've gotten offers, but he didn't get one until the Penguins, he didn't sign one until the Penguins signed him to one.
Now, Dave, one more point on this and we'll move on. But this doesn't necessarily mean these guys weren't drafted at some point, right? They can be drafted and decide, I'm not going with that team. I'm going to stay in college another year, and then I can become a college free agent, correct? So we're talking about all that these players are all in that type of pool.
I believe that at least as far as the Penguins were concerned, everybody they've signed as a free agent out of college was undrafted.
Okay.
You know, it's possible there was an exception to the rule there, but
there have been the list that you have in insiders, the undrafted guys, but they have Thomas DePauly comes to mind. Thomas DePauly was a Capitals draft pick and then just didn't sign with them. So they have picked up other teams' leftovers who either, you know, elected not to sign with them or didn't sign, but the significant ones really have gone undrafted.
Right. It's you start to think of guys like Kevin Hayes with Philadelphia, right? He was one of those guys, I think, that was drafted by the Blackhawks and never came to terms with them. And then he ends up going that route. I think Jimmy Vesey, Torrey Krug is certainly one of those guys that I think is more of what we're talking about. Not kind of a smaller player, ended up, and continues to have a good career. So that's interesting.
They added another one of those guys going into this season, like someone who was drafted, but then just didn't sign. Kevin Stevenson. Kevin Stevenson was signed to an AHL contract with Wilkes-Barre going into this season. He was drafted by Carolina, and it sounds like he chose not to sign with Carolina. Like, he waited it out. It wasn't that, you know, Carolina passed over him. He chose not to sign, and then they swooped in and signed him to a minor league contract. So, there's a couple of those guys floating around, maybe not on NHL deals, but.
Well, you know who else? I mean, I hate that we're drifting too far off topic because this wasn't what Dave was talking about. But John Marino, right? John Marino is an example of that because he was drafted by Edmonton. Oh no, he was traded. Correct.
He was actually traded. He was right, but Edmonton traded him because he wasn't going to sign there.
Going to sign, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Interesting. Interesting stuff. And while we're on that subject, Taylor, you wrote a piece in the Talking Points about what. Which of the Penguins prospects is kind of playing well and having a good season? Give us a little for people that did not read it. Who's been like the biggest surprise so far this year? I guess that's more of the point of what the column was. Who have been the biggest surprise in the prospect pool?
Yeah, I mean, you want to talk about undrafted free agents? Felix Robert, who they signed out of. Sherbrooke Phoenix and the QMJHL heading into the season. He's on an AHL contract. It's another kind of low-risk signing. I had him as my biggest surprise just because my expectations heading into the season were, so low for him. He had a really good last season in juniors. He had 36 goals, 56 assists, and 46 games. I mean, that's a lot, but he was playing alongside, Samuel Poulin, the Penguins' first-round pick, and he's kind of small. He's, I think, 5'8", 5'9". So I was like, well, how much of his production was a result of, Poulin? Like, can his size really translate to the professional game? I think he was committed to play for, a Canadian university team before the Penguins signed him, which, Canadian university, not really that strong of hockey. But, he's been the biggest surprise so far. I think right now he's fourth in scoring, but just beyond that, his physical play for a guy as small as he is just so surprising. Like, no one remembered to tell him that he's small. He's short, but he's muscular. Like, he's built well, and he throws heavy hits. And you can look at the gifs I put on the site too, and that story. But he's fast. He has a really good shot. And the thing that J.D. Forrest, the head coach, he is always talking about him is that he just never quits on a play. He calls him a water bug. He said it might take him, he might have to try to steal a puck once or twice because he's a little bit smaller, but, he'll get it. But he said he's fearless. He doesn't stop working. But, there's examples of that, leading to goals too. And he's just a good playmaker. But, he's a guy that, if I think – if they're going to – any of these guys on AHL contracts, if anyone could earn an NHL deal, I think it should be Felix Robert. He's just been so good.
All right. Last thing before we move on here. Just, again, sticking with the whole prospect side, Dave, we saw a lot of P.O. Joseph early in the season, and there was a lot to like. What's going on there? Because when they did have – obviously the lineup, a lot of the defensemen came back, but where did – in your talks with Hextall – and Burke, either one of you guys can address this. Are they happy with what he's doing right now? Because we haven't seen him obviously in Pittsburgh. Where is he right now in the thoughts of the organization?
I don't think he's first and foremost in their thoughts. They're pretty well stocked at left defense, especially since they didn't trade any of those guys at the deadline. I think they're very happy with what they saw from him early in his time in the NHL and feel reasonably confident that if circumstances would force them to use him during the stretch drive or playoffs, that he would acquit himself well. But I also think they're trying to guard against, force feeding the league to him. Defensemen Right. take a long time to develop in most cases and rarely suffer from being in the minor leagues. So,
sure.
I think he's a very bright light for the future, but not somebody that they're necessarily going to count on in the near term.
Okay.
Go ahead, jump
in there, Taylor.
Yeah, I've seen every game PO's played in Wilkes-Barre since he's been sent down. He's been contributing offensively down there, which is nice, but what's stood out to me is his strength in his shot, but then also his hits. Like, he's laying a lot of heavy hits, which is not really something that we've seen from him you know, like last season in the AHL or really even this season at the NHL level. And I asked Forrest if that's something that, you know, they're talking about him with, like, do they want to see like more physical play from him? And he said they haven't had that conversation with him, but he thinks maybe the reason that it's more noticeable now is that he has gotten a lot stronger. So he's able to finish those hits more. So it's not necessarily that they're trying to get him to play more physical, but he just continued to play as physical as he has been before, but he's just able to finish a lot of those hits because he's gotten so much stronger. And then it's paying off in his shot too, like I said. He just has a really heavy shot now, it seems like, more so than last year at this level. So he is improving down there, playing top minutes, quarterbacking the top power play. So he's in a good situation.
All right, good stuff here. We'll wrap up this segment. We'll be back with TSN analyst Craig Button. So please stay with us on the 66 to 87 podcast on DK Pittsburgh Sports Radio. Welcome back to the 66 to 87 podcast here on DK Pittsburgh Sports Radio. We are delighted to be joined by Craig Button, analyst for TSN, a former Calgary Flames general manager, also has some ties to the Pittsburgh area. His father, if longtime fans will remember, Jack, was the GM here, also worked in the front office for several years. Craig, you must have spent a little bit of time here, a few years of your early life in Pittsburgh.
Yeah, 7 years, 1968 to 1975. There was a picture this year, a team picture, after Ron Hextall had been named the new GM of the Penguins. And there was a picture of Jim Rutherford on the outside. He was the goaltender. There was Brian Hextall, Ron's father, sitting right next to Jim. And then right behind him was my father. So it was kind of interesting. I was saying to Kenny Albert, who was doing the broadcast that day for NBC, I said, oh, that's a neat little picture. And Kenny had worked in Baltimore with the Skipjacks when my father was with the Washington Capitals. So there was a lot of neat connections there. You know, I played in our minor hockey and our amateur hockey in the Pittsburgh area over at Ross Traver Arena. I mean, Ron Hextall, his brother Rod, Davey Morrison, who's the director of player personnel for the Toronto Maple Leafs now, Lowell and Lane McDonald. We were all playing. We were all playing in the amateur hockey circles in Pittsburgh back in those days. And look at where we are today.
You wouldn't have to drive that far to get to a rink in Pittsburgh these days, Craig.
You know, Dave, you know what I remember? Certain things you never forget. I remember, like, the rink being like one of those cold brick arenas where the permafrost was actually perma. It was there 12 months a year. And when our team moved down to Dallas from Minnesota in 1993, there was only one ice rink arena in Dallas at that time for practice, and that's where we went. And I walked into it, and it was like, oh, my God, I'm right in Ross Traver Arena again. It was exactly the same type of setup, the same refrigeration, and, yes, the same permafrost.
fans who get a chance to watch TSN probably have noticed Craig looking a little different. Craig, it looks like did you go a few rounds with Tommy Wilson, or how did you get that those stitches under your eye and in your eyebrow?
Well, you know what, we're on the pickleball court and you know, playing a little bit, and I stumbled and fell, and my sunglasses is what cut me. And, you know, the doctor was really funny. She made a couple of cracks. She always thought that her first pickleball injury encounter would be a sprained ankle, not stitches. But it all worked out well. But my story, and I'm sticking to it, is that pickleball now reveals toughness and character.
There you go. That's outstanding. Hey, trade deadline just passed, and the Penguins – you know, at a time weren't sure what the Penguins might do, if they would kind of put their toe in the water or jump in, and they for certainly got a big name, a little bit of an older player in Jeff Carter. I want to get your thoughts on that move and how he might impact that lineup going toward the playoffs.
Well, a healthy, I think Jeff played really well for the LA Kings this season. I think a big reason for their success this year was because of the play of Jeff Carter and Jonathan Quick and Dustin Brown and Drew Doughty, Kopitar, those players that had really been, you know, key pieces to their Stanley Cup success. And, you know, when you're integrating a lot of young players and you get the benefit of those experienced players playing at that level, it's really, really significant. You know, Jeff is not going to be asked to come in and assume a frontline role, but his ability to score, he's poised, he's calm, he can play on the power play. He's exceptionally gifted in being able to play with good players and take advantage of what good players can provide him. Like, I think it's one of those moves that just really can pay big dividends because it just takes a little bit of the pressure off of some of your other offensive players. And you also have to put a focus on Jeff as well, because when you're an opponent, you can't just leave him alone. He's got fast hands. He knows how to get open, and he can still shoot that puck very accurately. So we all know what his experience is and his success of winning. And I think that, you put him in a lineup where he's going to be asked to do exactly what he's capable of doing will really benefit the Penguins.
Craig, looking around the rest of the East Division, which teams do you think helped themselves the most with the moves they made at the trade deadline?
Yeah, I think the Islanders, I mean, they're a good team. I think we all know they're a good team. But, you know, the loss of Anders Lee and then Lou Lamoriello, you know, reinforces the team with Palmieri and Zajac. And they fit into what Barry Trotz wants to do with his team. So I think they became stronger. We know what they've done the last couple of seasons. So there's no reason to underestimate them. The Boston Bruins with Taylor Hall, they've struggled to score for stretches this year. I think with David Krejci playing in the middle with Hall, it can really allow Taylor Hall to maximize his impact. And by extension, that'll help the Boston Bruins. I know there was a lot of fanfare made about the Washington Capitals getting Anthony Mantha, and he's a good goal scorer. I don't think he's a better goal scorer than Jakub Vrána. And I understand what Brian McClellan was doing with respect to trying to change maybe the look of his forward group. But, you know, that's a pretty big price he paid. And I don't think they improve their team to a point where they become a real threat. And when I see the Penguins improve in the areas that they did, I see the Islanders improve and even the Boston Bruins. I know the Washington Capitals sit atop the division, and I think they're a good team. Don't get me wrong, but I think they needed to find another defenseman or another goaltender, a little experience. And they tried that with Henrik Lundqvist, and obviously his health issues prevented him from that. But I see Pittsburgh, Boston, and the Islanders, you know, strengthening their team here. Washington changed the look of their team. I don't think they're stronger.
Looking around the entire league, who do you think some of the biggest winners were with the moves they made at the deadline?
Yeah, well, you know, you look at it, for me, I see a team. I see the teams that, you know, were legitimate contenders. You know, Tampa Bay, checkmark. They go and get David Savard. Colorado, they needed a goaltender. They go and get a goaltender. You know, the Toronto Maple Leafs, they go and they add to their group. You know, the Vegas Golden Knights made a big splash last year getting Pietrangelo, and he's a good player. The Janmark acquisition reminds me a lot of Erik Haula. And Erik Haula was a good player for them when they went to the Stanley Cup final a few years ago. And I think last year what he did for the Dallas Stars, you know, en route to the Stanley Cup final can really help them. So when I look across the board and I see teams that I see as legitimate Stanley Cup contenders, I see strengthening of those rosters. And, you know, that's the Penguins, that's the New York Islanders, that's the Tampa Bay Lightning, the Toronto Maple Leafs, Vegas, and the Colorado Avalanche. And I think everybody else just kind of comes a little bit behind them because, as I mentioned about with the Washington Capitals, I think they're a good team. I don't think they became stronger at the deadline.
David? Craig, what do you see the champion this year being determined by factors other than what normally go into making a champion, just because it's been such an unusual year? Or will this just be a playoffs like any other?
Yeah, I really don't believe it'll be a playoffs like any other. I think one of the interesting things is even when we look back to the return to play last year, the long layoff and, the players, in the bubble got ramped up. And then once they started to play, the skill and the competitive spirit of the individuals and the teams, came out. I think one of the things that's really interesting this year is that you've played the same teams in your division. You've played back-to-backs. And in some cases, you've played more than you've played the same team more than just back-to-back. So that familiarity of knowing what your opponent is, there's not as much of a surprise factor. There's not as much of a, okay, how does this team look? Last time we played them was in February. So, and even heading into the trade deadline, I really felt that teams to say that, they weren't certain what they needed to do. If you couldn't be certain playing the same teams, regularly throughout the regular season, you're never going to be sure. So, you need to do, that's diminishing it. But when you can look and say, this is exactly our competition, these are the teams we're going to have to beat to get out of our division to be in the conference finals and be one of the last four teams standing, that gives a general manager and an executive group an opportunity to clearly identify, what the challenges are, what the strengths of their team are, and then how to make themselves a little bit stronger. So I think there can be some benefits there with respect to the way it is. But as we've seen for the last 13 and a half months, there's nothing that's normal or familiar. and even if we go back to last year and the return to play, that's very different to what we're going to see this year with respect to teams playing in their own buildings for the most part through their divisions.
And in that vein, Craig, it seems like one aspect of the game that might have been affected even more than most of the others is scouting. With junior leagues playing limited schedules and scouts being barred from some buildings. What are the challenges of evaluating prospects this year? And might this be even more of a crapshoot than usual for teams in the draft?
Well, I would answer the second question first. Yes, it will be. And what NHL scouts and teams are looking to do is gain as much confidence in the players they're looking to select as possible. Now, when you go a long stretch, and it goes all the way back to last March, where players have played intermittently, some players have not played at all. So, trying to gauge improvement, progression over 13 months with that type of challenge, and it's the same for every team. It's not like one team has to deal with it and other teams don't. Everybody's dealing with exactly the same thing. It does affect your confidence level with respect to having the opportunity to assess those players. So, we know there's no guarantees in the draft. And so at the same time, we know that those without the benefit of watching those players for a period of time and really, dialing into it, it's going to make the certainty of what you're doing less so. And that's just a byproduct of the situation.
Craig, excellent stuff. We thank you so much for being part of our show today. Really good insight, especially it's kind of looking at some of these trade deadline moves. And we talked about this last week. We kind of agree with you a little bit on Washington and kind of the moves they made, but we'll have time to sort this out as we head into the final stretch. Craig Button, thank you so much for being with us. For Taylor Haas and for Dave Molinari, this is Tom Reed. We'll see you next week on the 66 to 87 podcast here on DK Pittsburgh Sports Radio.